I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Our discussion may raise some questions in your mind, and if any of the issues that you hear in today's episode sound like something you'd like to discuss with me, at the end of the show, I'll let you know how you can connect with me. We'd also really appreciate your helping others learn the tips that we share on Smashing the Plateau by sharing this episode with your colleagues and friends, and by leaving a review on iTunes, because that helps new people find the show. And ultimately, we really want you and others like you to succeed in business and in life. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Mark Monchek. Mark's mission is to empower conscious leaders to build great companies that make a difference in the world. He founded the Opportunity Lab to build organizations that are more conscious and sustainable, making life better for their employees, their customers, and their communities. Mark uncovers unconscious beliefs shifting from scarcity to abundance. Mark has worked with leaders from Google, Apple, General Electric, Goldman Sachs, The New York Times, the Wharton School of Business, NBC, Columbia University, Time Warner, the United Nations, the American Lung Association, and United Way of Greater New York to help them take their organizations to the next level of sustainable growth. These may all be names of companies or organizations that you've heard of, but in addition to these names of a fairly large organization, Mark also works with social entrepreneurs and emerging businesses, which he describes as being the backbone of the growth of our economy. Mark's work has been featured on the Lifetime Network, That Matters, Conscious Talk Radio, WCBS, Catalyst, Newsday, Working Women Magazine, and the San Francisco Chronicle. A chapter from Mark's forthcoming book, The Culture of Opportunity, was published as a part of OD Network's Organization Development and Practice in January 2016. In addition to all these extensive pieces of background, Mark is also the founder of the Center for Social Innovation in New York. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David, and so excited to be here. And really love the whole concept of smashing the plateau and the fact that you're unveiling some things that often people just don't talk about in business that is so essential that we do talk about. So I'm really grateful to be here.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that. I know that many people are in a plateau because of fear and frustration. And I suspect that that's part of why people don't like to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've had this ethos in business that everything should be successful and everything should be positive. And yet the fact is, you know what, most of the time we fail. And most of the time, you know, there are things that we do worry about and that are scary to us. And so the most inspiring people in my life are people that actually have experienced the fear, faced the fear, and smashed the plateau to get to the next level because they were able to see there was something holding them back. So I love the fact that you have a whole range of guests talking about all different aspects of smashing the plateau. A lot of what you deal with is sort of the inner fears and conflicts that we all have, and that the more we bring them to light, the more we can actually break through and get to the other side.
So that being said, why do you think so many people struggle with this concept of the plateaus that we experience in business and life, and why it's maybe so challenging to confront what we actually need to confront to smash them?
Yeah, David, great question. I think it goes back to the way that we teach children about the world and about what success is. So I remember when I was in school, and even when my daughter was in school, the whole idea was to get excellent grades, to win or be successful in every class, to do better than the other kids. You know, you would get an A, somebody else wouldn't. So this is whole idea of scarcity. You know, there are not enough A's to go around. There are not enough students who can get into Harvard to go around. There's not enough scholarship money to go around. So there's this belief that we have to compete even against somebody who might be sitting next to us in order to, quote unquote, win in life. And therefore, the things that scare us and the things that trouble us are often kept inside in the pursuit of quote-unquote success. And now we find that we're in a world where people are saying, well, what is success to me? Is it working 90 hours a week? Is it the fact that we work 9 weeks more as a society than we did in 1973? Is that success? So I think we're in an age, particularly with millennials, my daughter's generation, with the largest generation in American history, that is questioning this whole idea of success as just being about money and status and thinking maybe there's other things that are important.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that, in particular, that young people are questioning these values that have been imparted to through education, through our educational system, around success. Because in the past, I suspect that it may have been people who were older who realized that success was not what we were told.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's interesting that now younger people are starting to raise the same kind of questions that may not have cropped up until midlife.
Yeah, and it's having a very, very significant impact on companies in this country and around the world who are finding that in order for millennials to want to go to work for them, they want to have a company that stands for something. It's got to be a good place to work. It's got to be a place that treats its customers well. It's got to be a place that has some social mission, that thinks about the environment, that thinks about the communities that they do business in. And they're also seeing that customers actually care much more about that than ever. So we're going through a whole revolution about what business is, who works in businesses, who buys from businesses. And I think that's a great, refreshing concept that's I think shifting the whole world very radically.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that this shift is taking place faster than many people realize?
Yeah, David, I think everything is taking place faster than everybody realizes. We live in what I call the age of disorder. It's like whatever we thought change was even, 9 years ago before the crash of 2008, or even 5 years ago before what's happening right now with the election and with all kinds of changes in business. It's change is here. It's radical. It's disruptive. It's unpredictable. And if we're going to live in the world in a healthy way and be in business healthy, we have to accept that reality. It's going to happen as fast as it needs to happen, and it's not going to be in our control. And that is a different mindset than we've had before, and it requires a different way of thinking on the part of leaders of companies, employees in companies, customers, voters, everybody in the world.
So what you're saying, Mark, is that we can't control change.
We can't control it. We can influence it. So there's a big difference between control it. We can't dominate its direction, mm-hmm. but we can have an impact on it.
So where do you suggest that people start? Particularly if you're sensing a plateau and having that feeling of unease or fear or frustration, whether you're mid-career or whether you're early in your career as an entrepreneur in corporate, because you work with a whole host of organizations at all different developmental stages. You work with various age populations, but the sense of unease, fear, and frustration can happen to anybody at any point, and it can be overwhelming.
Yeah, let me tell you a personal story that I think might help put this into the perspective that I think will help our audience really learn from what I think that I've learned, and then I can answer the question more in a deeper way when I tell you that story. It's about 8 years since this particular experience, and it's really very much on my mind right now because I'm coming up on the 8th anniversary of this particular experience. At the end of 2007, I went to India for 3 weeks, and I had one of the most profound experiences in my life, seeing a country that over the course of the last 20 years has taken 350-odd million people out of poverty into the middle class. And toured throughout the country and saw some of the most incredible traditions. Hinduism started there. Buddhism started there. There are 200 million Muslims live there. Came back to this country with this incredible sense of gratitude of living in the country with the wealth that we have. And I found out 3 weeks later that somebody who worked for me stole an enormous amount of money from my company. That was exactly at the time that our economy, this is in the winter of 2008, was beginning its precipitous decline, which ended up in the fall of that year into what we know as the crash of 2008. So as I was waking up every morning and watching the news of thousands and thousands of people being laid off, thousands of people losing their homes, losing their pensions, I was going into my own free fall, into this depression that was precipitated by this theft. And I ended up crashing, talk about smashing the plateau. I crashed and hit my plateau, really, really smashed it by ending up in the hospital with a depression that I could not control, cure, relieve in any way. That was in August, just 8 years ago. And I woke up in a hospital bed with this amazing gratitude, thinking that I'm still alive. And the word opportunity started coming into my consciousness every single day. And I started seeing a shift in the economy that then became a shift in how I thought about my life and my business that changed it radically, where as bad as the economy was from a standpoint of job loss and companies going out of business, there were many companies that were actually thriving and succeeding despite of the bad economy. So Google, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, TED, I mean, many, many companies actually thrived and grew exponentially through 2007, 2008, 2009, and beyond. And I realized it had to do with their belief systems. And I realized that I had crashed myself and hit my plateau because of my belief system that because this money was stolen, I didn't have enough, I couldn't recover. And I realized in the year before, 2007, I was flying around the country really worried way too much about status, about how much money we were earning, and not enough about what really makes a difference in the world, which is doing good business. So that shifted me into thinking about the mission we have now, which is empowering conscious leaders to build great companies to make a difference in the world, change the name of our company to the Opportunity Lab, and develop this culture of opportunity process that we have been developing ever since. So the plateau that I reached was this idea that success is external, this idea that there isn't enough to go around, this idea that life is a competition. And what happened to me sort of caused me to radically restructure those beliefs and kind of smash the plateau for myself. And our economy has changed enormously in 8 years. And what you're seeing is companies that are collaborative, companies that care more deeply about their employees or customers or communities are starting to succeed and spread that success in a much, much more powerful way than they ever did before 2008. And people want to work for and do business with those companies like never before.
So for the benefit of our listeners who are hearing this, if you do want to become a more collaborative and caring company, how do you start making that shift?
David, I think you start by being really clear on your purpose. Why are you in business and why are you in life? What is your reason for being? Why did God or whoever the creator was, whoever put you on earth, why are you here? What are you here to do? So I think the greatest companies are really clear on their purpose, and their purpose has a higher meaning only than making profit. Profit's obviously very important, but profit alone is not sustainable over the long run. So when I looked at my personal mission statement, and I've written it many times, we have a program called The Power of Purpose. We help people and the companies get clear on the mission, is to live with grace, passion, and joy, co-creating abundance with the people I love and the causes I believe in. Wake me up in the middle of the night, and I will tell you that's my mission statement. The mission of our company, as you said earlier, is to empower conscious leaders to build great companies and make a difference in the world. So that mission helps me be very clear on the choices we make, on the kind of clients we work with, the kind of work that we do, the kind of partners that we want to partner with, and the kind of way that we want to be in business. So getting clear on your purpose and being sure you're doing your very best to live it every day is sort of tip number one, I would say.
Okay. And does that ever come into conflict with the leaders of the company thinking, well, this all sounds great, but how am I going to pay the bills?
Oh, all the time. Absolutely, all the time. And so that's part of the belief that by, quote unquote, giving something to your employees, your customers, you're taking away something from yourself or from your company. And that's this idea that the world is competitive and resources are scarce. So what we try to teach our clients is you're not giving away something. You're sharing something that can have a greater value when you give it to that other entity, that customer or that person. And that comes back to you in greater brand loyalty and greater employee engagement. So it's a virtuous circle rather than, you know, a zero-sum game.
Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to share a story or an example of a company that has made this kind of shift and what has resulted?
Sure. So I'm gonna share a company, one of our clients, that you wouldn't particularly know, but I think that's a great example of the shift that they've made and the positive results of that shift. So we have a company out in California, Felsberg Enterprises is their name. They are a company that owns a number of electrical supply companies. So they sell circuit breakers, wire, lighting, anything that goes into a house where electricity flows through it. So they were always a fairly successful company, but not really a thriving, vibrant company as they are now in the last couple of years. And they really thought that their employees were important, but they were sort of the people who were supposed to do the tasks to get the things done that got the customers what they needed and made them the money. They never really saw their employees as part of the solution to being a better company. They never thought their employees had ideas how to make the company more efficient, how to make the company give their customers a greater experience. And we started to show them how by giving their employees better training, a better onboarding experience, bonuses for performance, a interactive performance review process, that their employees would perform at a much higher level, would give ideas, would work towards the company's goals in a much more empowered way. And now we're seeing this company really thrive and innovate in ways that, you know, they had never done that before. And now they're saying, wow, what we're giving to our employees, we're getting back many times over.
And so so the result is greater success for the company.
Greater success along a multitude of dimensions. So greater success in terms of employee engagement and productivity, greater success in terms of customer satisfaction, greater success in terms of profitability, greater success in terms of return on investment in the assets that they've put into certain areas of the company. A multitude of measures.
Mm-hmm. And when companies go through this kind of transformation, where does the leadership often see pushback?
Great question. I think the leadership sees pushback in how do you measure an investment in employee development or in customer satisfaction? And it's not always easy or immediate to do. So we look at companies in our market to see best practices and where companies have done that. We look to see companies across a whole scale of different industries where they've been able to measure that. And sometimes it's a gut feel. You put together as much data as you can and you go with what you think is the right thing to do. So you try to measure it. You try to get data. You try to get best practices. But in the end, I think there's always a certain amount of trust that goes into making a change like that. But we still measure the results. So we're constantly looking at how productive are our employees, how satisfied are our customers, how efficiently are we developing a certain process and so forth. But a lot of times the pushback is that the leaders just have never thought about their role in inspiring and empowering people. It means they have to let go of a certain amount of control over what they thought was their purview to do and let other people make decisions. That's often where the hardest change that the leader has to make is.
That sounds like a huge leap of faith.
It is a huge leap of faith, but there are so many companies that have done it that it's getting to be much more common. So you look at companies like Timberland, like the Container Store, like Costco, like Trader Joe's, that have really been in the forefront of empowering their people and the results that they're getting in the marketplace. So the business case is much easier to make than it ever was before.
Do you find that there are other factors that are part of this mix that make it, either maybe easier for certain kinds of companies to make this cultural shift, like age of employees or the kind of market they're in?
Absolutely. So, I mean, social media has made feedback so instantaneous and so much more pervasive and easy for people to give. So when you're getting feedback instantly about a product that you launched that didn't work properly, I'll give you a great example. So in 2012, Apple kicked Google Maps off the iPhone. I don't know if you remember this, but Steve Jobs died.
I do remember it.
It was a huge public relations nightmare for Apple. You know, Steve Jobs died in the fall, I think in November of 2011, and he went to his grave saying to his employees, whatever we can do to hurt Google, I want you to do. And the success DNA of Apple had always been to design and manufacture their products to be beautiful, functional, and perfectly operational, right? Almost never did you hear a flaw in an Apple product. Recalls of Apple phones, of iPods, of AirBooks, you hardly ever heard of it, right? Because they're just passionate and they're just absolutely, ferociously perfectionistic about what they put out. So they didn't follow their success DNA. They tried to hurt Google. They put their IMAP product out there. It wasn't ready. It wasn't good. People hated it. They fired the head of their group. They put Google Maps back on the iPhone, and they apologized. So that was an example of instant customer feedback, and I'm sure they had a lot of employee feedback too. And if that would have happened 10 years ago, it might have taken months or longer for them to be able to even see that they made such a mistake.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned social media because many traditional companies are slow to get into the social media space, particularly when it comes to being really open to customer feedback and also being open to the flow of information. They like to control what the message is coming from the company.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if you have some experience with what's going on with regard to social media and how that impacts creating a culture of opportunity.
Well, I think you're right that was the way that large companies looked at it. I think that's really changed radically. I don't think that's the case anymore. Like my daughter works for Saatchi & Saatchi. Her client is Procter & Gamble. So she manages Pampers brand for Saatchi. And so Procter & Gamble is a very, very traditional company, but they are very, very attuned to social media. They use Facebook enormously, Twitter. They have a huge presence on YouTube. They release more important programs on YouTube than they do often on network television now. So I think even those large traditional companies understand that you have to be adept at social media. You have to listen to customers. You cannot control the message. If you try to control the message, millennials will see how false that is. And, millennials are, if not the primary audience customers for Pampers now, but they are becoming that in the next, 10 years. And employees also understand that their companies have to be much more transparent and they want to work for companies like that. So I think there's been a big shift in the way companies view social media and the way they view customer feedback in particular.
That's great. So Mark, we spoke earlier about your own personal experience and how that led to you smashing a plateau big time.
Mm-hmm.
If your dreams could come true, based on what you've learned and what you've done in your work since you've smashed the plateau and launched your company working towards creating a culture of opportunity, what would the business world look like if your dreams were to come true?
Oh, wow. That is a powerful, expansive question. Let me just say before I answer that, I don't think you're ever finished smashing the plateau. I mean, I think if you want to continue growing as a person, if you want your company to continue growing, if you want the world to continue to be better, then I think about what Mahatma Gandhi said, one of his famous quotes is, be the change that you want to see in the world. And in order to do that, you're constantly looking at what your plateaus are and how to, if not smash them, dissolve them, remove them, liquidate them. So I'm constantly looking at the plateaus in our company and within myself, and constantly being aware, often through meditation practice, which I've been doing for 10 plus years, of where those limitations are. So how would I see a better world by using what I learned in smashing my own plateau?
Yes.
My dream would be to get the leaders of and companies that move the needle, leaders of companies that have a huge footprint in their space and have an impact on the world, to get out of the C-suite if they're not already doing that, go into their stores, go into their warehouses, go into their distribution centers, go into where their customers shop and where their employees work, and experience life from a perspective that they themselves don't have. I mean, that's the key to me in smashing any plateau, is having an experience that you have never had before, opening yourself up to parts of yourself that you've never seen, doing that by getting other people to give you feedback, being open to hearing anything and everything from your customers, your employees, your investors, your partners, and not being afraid of what you're going to hear. I mean, so I'll give you an example. You could probably relate to this. I think our audience could. When I go into Costco, which is one of my favorite stores, I have an easy time finding things. If I can't find something, people are very, very ready to help me. I feel like the company cares about me. They want me to get a great item at a great price. Their employees are paid above the industry average. Their employees have health care. Their employees have more say into what they do. They do care about the environment. When I go into most chain drugstores, I go in there, I spend 15 minutes trying to find things. There's nobody there to help you. If you do find somebody, you're likely that they even know where to find something. And they don't really seem to care about it. I just wonder if the senior executives of those companies actually shop in the stores that they run. So you'll see a radically different experience with a conscious company. Like you go to Trader Joe's. If you walk around in Trader Joe's and you look lost, somebody to come up to you and say, sir, can I help you find something? I was once at the cash register and I forgot something. And I said to myself, darn, I forgot the scallions. The gentleman at the register called up and he found somebody in produce and he brought me the scallions. I didn't have to leave the line. I was like, that's an experience of a company that I want to do business with. So I think it's also realizing we can vote every day with where we shop, who we work for, who we do business with, what companies we invest in. It's not just voting for president every 4 years. We can vote multiple times every single day by where we put our resources.
That's really great. That's really great. Yes, we can. And Mark, speaking of voting, who would you vote for as somebody who has been successful at smashing a plateau that you know personally?
But I would vote for Michael Blake, who is a friend of mine of 16 years. And Michael, I met when he was 16 years old. He was a junior at DeWitt Clinton High School in the Bronx. He sang a cappella in front of a board of directors that I was consulting to. I gave him my card. I said, Michael, if you ever need help, I'd be happy to help you. He called me up 2 weeks later. He said, Mark, I'm the first kid in my family to go to college. a few thousand dollars short. Can you help me? I did a fundraiser for him. We raised the money, went to Northwestern, graduated at the top of his class, became a sportscaster. Then he went to become in the then Senator Barack Obama's leadership program in Chicago, graduated, became the head of the Get Out the Vote ground operation in Iowa for the Iowa primary. Obama won. That was his first primary. Newsweek magazine said, man on the ground in Iowa, Michael Blake, more important than Obama himself. Michael was then appointed to be the youngest assistant executive director in the Agency of Intergovernmental Affairs, worked for Obama administration for six years, and then he ran for the state assembly in the 79th district in the Bronx and was elected 4 years ago. I worked on his campaign. HBO made a movie about the 2008 election, called We the People. Michael was one of the four people that was profiled in that, and it was nominated for an Emmy. Michael is reinventing politics and community development in the South Bronx, and he has smashed so many plateaus, I can't even keep track of them.
Great example. Now, going back to Mark, what do we have to look forward to from you in the near future?
Well, I'm writing a book, as you mentioned earlier, called Culture of Opportunity, Build a Business that Will Thrive in Any Economy. And a short version of that book will come out at the end of this year, and the full book will come out next year, 2017. And you'll hear some exciting case studies from the Culture of Opportunity process that we've worked with over the last 8 years, and some tips and tools about how to build a culture of opportunity in your organization.
Mark, how can listeners learn more about you and the work that you're doing?
Well, the first thing is go to our website. It's oplab.com, OPPLAB.com. And on our website, we have a newsletter. You can sign up for that. We have a blog. You can sign up for that. We have a YouTube channel, Oplab TV. We've got about 25 videos that we have on there, all different subjects related to the culture of opportunity. You can come and come to the Center of Social Innovation, where we are a co-founder, not the founder, but one of the co-founders, and experience what working in a collaborative workspace like that is. We have 220 social entrepreneurs and nonprofits and residents there. Or you can email me at markm@oplab.com.
That's great. And we'll include these in the show notes. Mark, this has been a really fascinating discussion. I feel like we've just gotten to the tip of the iceberg about how to create the really forward-thinking organizations and companies that our country and our world needs in order to continue to thrive. And as you state so well, to create opportunities because they're there. So thank you so much for coming on Smashing the Plateau today. My guest today has been Mark Monchek, one of the founders of the Opportunity Lab, and much more. Thank you again, Mark, for joining us.
Thanks, David. Such a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by TEND's Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. What has your experience been getting help when you've hit a plateau? What would you like to learn through this podcast that would give you the support you need? Let's continue the discussion. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter, and please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious, and I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.